That's good.
Yeah, we done got haunted.
Yeah, I know. It was really worried. Creepy. It was just a ticking, creaking noise in the wall.
Yeah. Hey, everyone, it's Seven Land Hand, brought to you by Good Game St. James. This week, Aaron returns from Kuala Lumpur, where he did more victorious grinding than a barista with a mortar and pestle on a skateboard. We'll talk traders like bitching high school girls at the water cooler. Aaron delivers a traitorous top 10 to leave all our noses bloodied. Most of that, a little drop of treason, and progress with a Seven Land Hand competition.
Oh, I'm into that.
You're not Sounds in it.
Good. I like all those things. I said
you're
I'm
exempt.
I'm into it. Oh, okay. I like the things which it represents.
You can't play Families and Friends of Seven Land Hand cannot enter.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Why is that? Is it just because I could cheat? I could always cheat the system?
Yeah, I think so.
Is that it? Sure, I could just make it... Well,
yeah, just soon. Oh, just like, yeah, just come up with, just like, do a list of seven land hands, seven land hand that you enjoy, and then just give it to a mate and have them enter, and then reap the rewards of the prize. If you want to do all that.
If someone goes to that length to do something like that, we'll just give them the prize. We don't really care that much.
Wait a minute, gentlemen. We're shitting all over my highbrow intro.
Oh, no, sorry.
Here we go.
Too much haranguing.
Yeah, here we go. too much haranguing. All right.
I'm a orangutan.
Yeah, well, you might fit into this list then. Guy Fawkes, Judas Iscariot, William Joyce, and that shepherd guy from the 300 with the hard-to-pronounce Greek name, Ephialtes of Trachis. They're all historical figures of treason. The traitor has long been frowned upon as the lowest of human acts. One minute you're sipping cappuccinos together, the next your best buddies rallied an army of Nazi zombies to smash up your mother's diamond wedding anniversary. Is the very notion of the traitor being flawed? Does it persecute the individual acting upon their own moral conscience when it flies in the face of a governing body? For example, Edward Snowden, the man known for blowing the whistle on the NSA, has been touted as both a hero and a traitor. Or does the traitorous act betray the most beautiful of human qualities, which is trust? Boobs. No, boobs. Trust.
Boobs.
Trust in boobs. Trust in boobs.
Troobs.
But what does it all mean to gamers? To discuss this with me today, I have, stoking the bonfire beneath the Houses of Parliament, Aaron Graham.
That's me.
That's
Hello.
You.
Hello.
And snogging Jesus in front of Romans, Eric Spain.
Hello. How are you?
Right, gentlemen, welcome to the Festival of Treason.
Thank you.
Sounds like a nice festival.
It is. You're festival a big festival.
But if you're expecting treason, is it still treason?
One is like, who did the traders commit treason on when it's a festival of traders?
Maybe you buy your ticket. It's a festival of happiness and good times. And when you get there, it's just a burnt field.
Bam, treason.
Yeah, with someone raping your mother in a field. Games review!
Yay!
All right, we're going to kick it off with the Resistance. And we've got a bit of a new format. We're going to try and keep it down to just a bare, maybe 2-3 games, and try and go a little bit deeper over the next few episodes, rather than just the... I mean, we don't mind being a bit fly-on-the-fly kind of static brand
mania. Yeah, of course.
Mania, but
I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, someone at home's got to listen to this, so we'll...
I find it funny that we're keeping a format... in the first podcast, about being a traitor and wrecking.
Well, by the end of this, it'll be just a wreck.
Yeah, we'll betray that idea by the end of the podcast because it's...
Exactly.
Usurp. That's my word of the week. I found myself using that.
The usurper.
Yeah. So, the Resistance. Who's played the Resistance?
I've played the Resistance.
Put up your hand if you played the Resistance. You don't have to put up your hand. We're on a podcast.
Oh, you've got me.
How does that work? How does Resistance work?
So, the Resistance...
What's the backstory
to the Resistance? The backstory is... There's some...
It's in the future.
It's set in
There's
the future.
A big corrupt government that has evolved out of the corporations gaining too much power. And you're a member of the Resistance that has banded together to take down this horrible corrupt government.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, the government has spies that have infiltrated the Resistance. And the spies are there to stop the Resistance from being able to succeed in their objective of taking down the government.
Yep.
So while you've got the traitors who are the spies who work for the government who are taking down the Resistance, you've kind of also got the Resistance trying to commit treason against the government at the same time.
So you've got your two sides.
So
and does everybody know the sides in this game?
Okay, so the way that the game is set up is that there are... You know that there are a certain amount of spies amongst your ranks. The game plays 5 to 10 people, which is one of the reasons I got it, because I knew it would be a good
It's good for larger groups.
You were hoping you'd get 5 or 10 mates.
5 or 10 mates, yeah.
Most games go max 5.
I have a 5 to 10 player game. On the street.
People
do you want to play?
Flock to you.
Do you want to play?
Yeah.
I got 5 to 10 people. I'm not going to say who they were.
Probably 5 then.
5? We actually played with 10 people the first
time.
Two of the people we didn't know.
Right.
It was the first time we'd met them.
Hope they didn't end up being the traitors.
Come on in. We ended up playing two games. There were four spies. And you get given a identity card at the start, and it can either have a red symbol, which says you're a spy, and blue fist thing, which means you're in the resistance.
Yeah.
And once they're given out, immediately shuffle back in. You're not allowed to show the card to anyone, but you are allowed to say literally anything else.
Yeah, great.
One of the best things about this is that if you are a spy, you're just trying to convince everyone you're in the resistance. If you're in the resistance, you're also trying to convince everyone you're in the resistance. So it's like...
There's an interesting part to the game, though, because everyone closes their eyes, and the spies, only the spies, open their eyes and see the other spies.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
So the spies know who they are. Yeah. But all the resistance don't know who the spies are.
Are you allowed to peek just a little bit?
No, it would ruin the game.
No peeking.
Makes it too easy.
Yeah,
this is a mechanic that's been used in Werewolf and Mafia all over the years, which can be played with 20 plus people. I've played it at uni and at like other bigger gatherings.
That was interesting. They finally brought out the Ultimate Werewolf, which plays up to 75 players.
Ultimate Werewolf, because there's you have so many werewolves, and then they have set rules, and there has to be someone that's mediating the game. But what's good in this one is
there's no werewolves in the resistance, though, is there?
No werewolves in this resistance.
Can I call it Resistant from now on?
I don't see why not.
I don't want to hear that.
So the resistance. What's next?
What's going on? So after you get dealt your cards
that define who
you are, you look at the board and it says how many spies there are. People can immediately start talking about, you know, I'm in the resistance.
I'm a good guy.
Yeah.
Everyone's a good guy.
Yeah.
Look at this face. And then no one could ever lie to you.
Randomly select a leader. It's only a temporary position because the resistance is ever changing and ebbing and flowing.
And you could have just appointed a traitor as the leader.
Who knows? The leader's job is to appoint or nominate a team to go on a mission.
Yeah.
The objective of the spies is 5 missions that run through the game. The objective of the spies is to have a fail happen on that mission. 1 fail from any amount of votes. Is enough to make the mission fail. And all the resistance needs to do is win a majority, so 3 of 5, with no fails on there. So the first time you build the leader, choose a team, they're literally pretty much nominating 3 random people, whoever has the most trustworthy faces.
if a good guy's in charge, I mean, if a traitor's in charge, then he's just going to make sure there's a traitor. When they did the eye open thing, he's going to go, right, Aaron, you're going on. Eric, we'll just pick him because I know he's not a traitor.
There's some amazing back and forth
here. That's where it gets interesting as well, because sometimes a traitor wants to put 2 resists on there early up to basically throw the heat off the
traitors. So how big's the team? Just 2 people.
So in the 10 player version, it was 3 people on the first.
There's 3 people, so there's 5 missions, and each one has a different number of people on it.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's in the 5 missions, I think it's 3 people, then 3 people, then 4, and finally 5.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's some stipulations with that. Say in the second last mission, you need to have 2 fails for that one to fail. I think it's 3, 3, 4, 4, 5 or something in 10
player. I think that's 10 player.
In the 5 player one, which I just played with my family the other day, that was interesting. Instead of playing it with friends. You just, like, you know the quirks of your family. In the first round, I was like, bam, 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 traitor.
The strangers are a blank canvas, aren't they? You're just reading for the first time.
Right. I don't know whether you would lie that blatantly to me. Mm.
But it's funny because it's like, they pick the team, and then everyone gets to vote whether or not the team, they like the team or not.
Oh, okay.
And if the team is rejected, the leadership passes to the next player. Yeah. And they get to pick a team.
Yeah.
It keeps doing that. Like, if it gets rejected multiple times until it finally gets accepted. And then once it's accepted, that team goes on a mission and the members of the team are
no physical, like, mission doing. No. Yeah.
It's just, the whole mission is basically you get a success card and a failure card. You hide them. You pick one and put it in the middle.
Yeah. Right, yes.
And
resistance members have to say that it succeeds.
Because they want them to succeed.
The best bit is spies can either succeed or fail.
But the results are hidden?
Results are hidden and they're flipped up one at a time. The
results
so
are shuffled, then they're flipped up. 1 or more failure cards means the mission's a failure and the spies succeed.
Mm-hmm.
If they're all successes, the resistance succeed. And then it's best 3 out of 5.
Brilliant. Now, I saw you were playing this the other day, weren't you?
Yeah, I was playing on Thursday, two days ago.
Yeah, Thursday night. Yeah. So what happened that night?
Oh, that was fantastic. We played 3 games in a row, and it was 7 players. So
How long's a game?
So the game takes about 15 minutes long.
Oh, wow, right.
About 3 minutes per mission, because it was literally decide a team.
Though it depends on the drunkenness of the people involved. And also and how the much people that thinking. You're with.
Sometimes getting into the box can take 45 minutes.
Yeah.
That's not the resistance fault, I should point out.
I remember the second game well because I was leader. And so all I did was look around the room and look to see who was the most guilty.
Yeah.
And three of them were just like trying to avoid my eyesight. I'm like, okay, you must be spies. Because I was resistance. I saw that I was a resistance.
Yeah.
But the tricky thing is, even if you're a resistance, if you say, I'm a resistance, and you put yourself on a mission and the mission fails, then one of you...
Someone's pointing fingers at you.
You know someone else is a spy.
Yeah.
But immediately everyone thinks you're a spy
mm-hmm.
because you chose the team. And there's a spy on the team.
One of the best things that... I don't know how... we had the three or... I think we had three spies in the first game we played because it was like eight people or something. Three spies on the first team. The person who was the leader... was on the resistance
yeah,
and ended up
a good
being.
Guy.
They chose two people that happened to be spies
yeah.
and they both managed failed. To lock eyes at the same time, put through successes on the first one.
Well,
so he was complete.
Oh,
so,
wow.
So all yeah. three of them, success. So yeah. we're like, man, we can trust all these guys.
We call yeah. that hiding out, where the spies throw in successes so you don't know they're spies, and then the rest of the game they're just sabotaging everything.
Yeah, so you give one of the missions away at the start because you know that you've got the trust of the people for the next four that you're going to be doing, and we just had no idea. We just had no idea that it was them. It was the first time we played, and they somehow managed to lock in without communicating at all
yeah.
and
yeah.
just... put through a success and we're like, oh cool, we can trust these guys. Next mission was just like four people or something. We're like, okay, those three
for sure,
and this person that looks trustworthy, and then it failed and we're like, it's that guy.
It's just,
he was like, no, it's not me,
you guys are spying. You're yeah. like, no, I'm not spying.
And later when they reviewed that glance, they were just going, I was just sort of giving you the eyes as in we give me a lift home tonight.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, sure, man. Yeah, sure.
Is that your foot under the table? Is that
yes.
success?
Yes.
But same thing happened to me. I was hiding out as a spy and I had to choose. So I picked two resistance members
mm-hmm.
and so they got through.
Yeah.
And I'm like I just... two resistance members, definitely going to pass.
Mm-hmm.
The next group, they were like, okay, we can trust those. We'll put them again. And they picked one of the other spies. And I'm like... Please succeed. It succeeded. So I'm sitting there going, oh, two spies have managed to hide out. They think we're good.
Yeah.
And then I realize resistance only need one more to win.
Yeah, that is rough.
We're at the other side of the scale where it's like we have to fail every single mission or we
yeah.
die. So they put the same three in again.
Mm-hmm.
And the mission fails. And so everyone's like, whoa.
Whoa.
So that team, we had three successes.
That's
now
the best
we've got
thing.
A fail. And
we always do the slow reveal. We're like... Yeah. Success. We're like, okay, we're good.
Fail.
Oh my god! Like,
yeah.
He's just like, oh!
It's the best way to do it.
Yeah.
But the fourth mission, we needed two failures.
Yeah.
And so the person put in two resistance, and I'm sitting there going, if he puts in a third resistance,
mm-hmm.
it's an instant win for the resistance.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sitting there going, please. And he immediately puts two spies in.
Two? He put in two?
The person that he just chose
yeah.
and myself. And we're just like, I'm just like, oh, thank God.
Oh, my God.
And then I'm thinking, wait a minute, this might get dangerous because if I vote accept, he knows I'm a spy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm like, I reject the team.
Yeah, exactly.
And then everyone else accepts and he's like, oh, no, there's spies on the team.
I trust you, Eric. I trust you.
And so
okay, you would have rejected that team.
I reject
okay.
it.
Yeah.
I say that I know there's a spy on the team because mm-hmm. I'm a spy.
So,
and he trusts me.
So in wrapping up, you know, what other games would be, you know, that other people have played that might jump in us? I mean, obviously, if you played any of the other games that we're going to talk
mm-hmm.
about, that would
yeah.
work.
So
I was thinking straight away just from hearing how you were describing this as Are You the Traitor, which is another
mm-hmm.
game. And that's obviously the same. It has a lot of same mechanics.
Are You the Traitor has a lot more specific roles. So it's
yeah.
very rare you're playing
there's
the same
more,
role.
It's not just spy versus resistance. It's like
mm-hmm.
there's...
But it's declaring
yeah.
what you are.
Yeah.
Each team knows what you are, so that would be a way. But
not
I was
like,
thinking...
Stop!
are there any generic kind of games?
Yeah,
that, you know,
like
you could...
the classic one, which has been played since like the 70s, 80s, is
Werewolf
and Mafia,
oh, okay.
which are both... there are some werewolves in your group. Everyone closes their eyes when it's nighttime. The werewolves open their eyes, both pick a target. When everyone opens their eyes, that target's dead. And then you just have to lynch someone.
Isn't there like Murder in the Dark or something like that?
It's similar to Murder in the Dark.
Party
it's,
game.
Yeah.
It's at night, the werewolves kill someone, and then during the day, the villagers
lynch
kill
someone. Yeah.
if the villagers right. manage to figure out who the werewolf is, they win. If the werewolf manages to kill everyone except for two people, I think
yeah.
it's like they
it's like if they have the majority
yeah,
left.
If
in
there's
the,
more
in the group.
Werewolves than humans.
Yeah. And I think it was originally Mafia, but then redone as Werewolf because so
made
Mafia is
sense.
Like you've got hitmen and then you've got informants or whatever.
Right.
But
and
if you've enjoyed playing that game, this is like that, but with a lot more social interaction. It really says you can say whatever you want. And we had some really interesting backstabbing in between and couples and really intense moments. It was really good.
I recommend this one. Like, if you have a group to 5 to 10 people, you need a good party game that's very easy to learn, very easy to get into, I would suggest The Resistance. As long as everyone there is easygoing. Because it's one of those games where if you take it too seriously, it goes sour really fast.
It's not like a diplomacy where it's you're literally going out of your way to stab people in the back. This is just kind of like white lies.
It's over in 15-20 minutes, and it's always good fun.
And it's got like a sister game, isn't it? Like Avalon? It's got
Avalon, exactly the same rules, but way more roles. You've got... Because in the regular game, you've got Resistance and Spies. In this one, you have Merlin, who knows who the spies are, but he's a good guy. But he has to hide from the assassin, who's one of the bad guys who wants to kill Merlin.
Right, yeah.
And then you've got Percival, who knows who the Merlin is, and then there's an evil Morgana, who pretends
so
to be...
King Arthur medieval sort of setting. Yeah.
So all it does is take the Resistance, add a few roles, and it ends up being a lot more like Werewolf or Are You the Traitor?
So you would say start with the Resistance...
Start with the Resistance or Ultimate Werewolf.
If you like a medieval thing, I say go straight for Avalon because that has the base rules in the same as Resistance. Mm-hmm.
And then you can add those... You can mix them, apparently.
Oh, wow. And you can add the new roles in later on as well.
Yeah, cool. One last thing about this one... We had 9 and 10 players, I think it was, and we found out the spies were winning all the time because it was too difficult to find 4 of them out of the 10.
Yeah.
So in our box, I don't know if it was a special edition or something, we got a bunch of plot cards, which the leader gets to distribute them among the group, and they do certain things like look at the person's identity card and that sort of thing. And if they're a spy, they can look at the spy's identity card and be like, oh, don't worry, everyone is in the Resistance and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it adds a little bit more play to it, makes it a little bit more difficult for the spies. I think we're going to play that next time because the spies won all of the games that we played with 10 people.
If you get a bit bored of Resistance, the plot cards add so much more depth and variety.
I haven't played with them yet, so I'm looking forward to that.
I think there's like 10 different cards and they all do something different.
Cool.
And it's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so next on the list, it's...
On the metal box.
It comes in a tin with a man's face. Maybe it's a man. Yeah, it's kind of... It's unshaven.
It's a parasite. It's a parasite face.
It's a panic station.
It's a clone's face, actually.
It is a clone's face. That's right.
Is it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Anyway, I love this game.
I have not had great experiences with it, but apparently that was my fault.
You had one game, didn't you?
One game. Two games.
My first game of this was dreadful, and then I've played about 6 times after that, and every single time it's been fantastic.
Yeah. That's what I wanted to hear, because I bought this game, and I was like,
I stand by this game. This is great. Mm-hmm. So, you're on, I imagine it's something like a Space Hulk type of ship.
We reference Space Hulk all the time.
It's a Space Hulk.
Yeah. It's not a TM Space Hulk.
But in the same way Space Hulk works, you build the Hulk up as you go with the location cards.
Yeah.
And it's collaborative for about 0.37 of a second. Yeah. The game says it's collaborative.
It's a good amount of collaboration.
Everybody comes on as a team, and in that team you get a couple of cards as your starting deck. And from those cards that you draw from, somebody, if not already, is going to immediately become infected.
Mm-hmm.
And once they're infected, they don't tell anybody, but it's their job to infect the other team members.
Mm-hmm.
The team members have to find the hive, blow up the hive, and that's the
flamethrower, am I correct?
With gasoline. Yeah. You need three gasolines, I think.
Correct, yeah.
Oh, I'm thinking of Space Hulk. I was actually thinking of Space Hulk. You've got a flamethrower the hive.
It's a forced trading thing, right? So if I get infected, I'm immediately trying to infect everybody else on the team. And if you enter a room, and it's just pretty much every single room you enter, you're forced to trade with the other person.
Mm-hmm.
You trade them. If I'm infected, I might slide you an infection card. If you give me anything but gasoline, you're infected too. And then you start trying to infect everybody and so forth. If everyone gets infected, the infected win.
Classic game of humans versus parasites.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And of course, if you pass gasoline back to me, then you don't get infected. And you're down a gasoline, which you need to destroy the hive.
But now we know you're infected.
Yeah, but the thing is, and this is where the fun comes in, if you've got a big table and, you know, you've got like, I think it says 10 people,
mm-hmm.
To play, you can just go crazy and just start lying left, right, and center from the, pretty much the second you draw.
Yeah.
I mean, you can even say, hey, I'm infected. Or yeah, you can say, I'm not infected. Yeah. You know, you can say, Aaron, you're definitely infected.
I'm not infected.
Eric, I'm a bit sus about Eric. I think he's infected.
But
all right?
You just told me I was infected.
Okay, well, we're good, right?
Infected. We're good. We're both. First thing we're going to do. Infected. No, no. Are you infected?
Okay, well, first thing I'm going to do is take you down then.
I'm not infected, though.
No,
just the way gasoline. Come on.
Just the way you behaved right then. I'm going to take you down. Right? So yeah, it just builds paranoia, and it's all about just, I think everyone should like Red Bull it up before they start, get super hyper, and just start accusing everybody immediately, and it's all about who you play with.
That was what our resistance game was like, seriously, shouting and screaming accusations at each other.
The flattest game I've ever had of Panic Station was when everyone was really nervy about it, because, and it was, maybe there's a few too many, the newer gamers were lesser than everyone else. It's one of those games where you sort of have to know the whole game before you start. Yeah. And you can have someone who's like a game champion, and it'll just say, okay, this is what you got to do. Don't reveal your cards. You can say anything you want. If this was what happens, react to it this way. Mm-hmm. And just general things of what to do and what not to do. And if everyone can remember that, then just make it a free-for-all.
Yeah.
But I think when it went flat, was everyone was a little bit too worried about blowing the whole game and ruining it.
That was exactly what happened in R1. We played a big game of... played a couple big games of Seven Wonders. Got really into it. It was pretty late. I just bought this. I was like, oh, let's try learn this. It says it takes
David's been crapping
about
it.
The commentator says 30 to 40 minutes it takes. And the first game we played took 2.5 hours.
Yeah. That was the thing. It said 30 to 40 minutes. We're like, we can learn this easy. I've learned heaps of games like this. And I was just reading through the instructions. I was like, you have to swap with people? You can get infected?
Yeah.
How do you use the computer? And we would try to learn it as we went. Don't recommend doing that, because it just ended up very badly for all of us.
Yeah, you kind of need someone who's learned it before. And, and like in the Resistance, you get these really cool moments where you can go and use the computer. You can do a scan of everybody. And everybody's got an infected card or a not infected card. Mm-hmm. And if you're infected,
you put the
infected card in. If you're not, you just put I'm clean a card in. They all get shuffled together and they get slow reveal who's infected, who's not, and you count them up. So you should always get like one person who's infected because the game's been going for a bit. Yeah. So if there's 60 at the table, I'm sure it says 10 on the box. I'm sure I've played it with less than that.
Four to six.
Oh, that's confusing. That's why we've got a little person and a big person. Oh, yeah, 4 to 6. They're cool, yeah.
10 so, plus, we accept people of all
yeah,
sizes.
Yeah, that makes more sense. God,
no, you can only be between 4 and 6 feet tall.
So, yeah. So if you're playing with 6 people, you'd expect one person to be infected and 5 clean ones. But then if the game's been going like 10 minutes, there's been a few trades, and there's 3 infected, you immediately have to rewind, and you're going, right, he's traded with him, she's given her the card to him.
Yeah. That's when the paranoia sits in. Something. All the people who are not infected are like, like,
oh my God.
And then all the people who are infected are like, it's very hard to tell who's who, but there was like, then the trading gets really serious.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've played a game which sort of fell down a little bit because someone that was the newest person was the infected person.
That never
works. They got
out.
Really nervous, and they just decided just to. The girl just tried to infect her boyfriend. Which, you know, I don't know. You can make whatever jokes
you do.
The first game of this was hilarious because
I
played it really safe and cool. Like, I wasn't really infecting anybody. Yeah. And I ended
like
up.
Bow tie or something
I
like
ended
that.
Up with 5 gas cans and 3 infection cards. So I hadn't infected anybody, and I'm running around carrying all the gas cans, which is what the humans want, and I was the host. The host is the first infected.
Oh, host it.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you've got loads of gasoline cans, you're good. I mean, that's kind of what you want to do.
Who wasn't kind of in the game, like he was kind of playing on his Game Boy. He was the first.
I love playing with people playing on the Game Boy.
He was the first. He was the first victim, and I passed him the infection card. And he just picks it up, looks at it, and puts it in his hand, and he just keeps on playing. He was the perfect.
That's pretty cool.
He was the perfect sleeper agent. So I'm there, and we're kind of exploring, and I'm like, like, it could be this way, it could be that way. Everyone's, like, running around because you explore... The base gets bigger and bigger and bigger.
Mm.
And then suddenly there's, like, parasites everywhere. So you're trying to gather everything, and then the parasites start running around and starts getting nightmarish. And the hive appears behind me. Like, I find the hive, it's behind me. And I'm the host, so I turn around and I'm like... Right.
Just go stand in the way, and everyone's got to come past.
Hey guys, the hive's this way. Run past me.
And it's forced trading. It's forced trading. So everyone's got to go through Eric to get to the hive.
That's how you affect people. They have to trade with you. You affect them as they trade with you.
Eric's just directing them down the passage. Which is like, go. And they just stop when they go past them. Like, oh.
Yeah, I infected somebody else. And so we're standing there. And at this point, I realize I've got 2 infection cards. He's got 2 infection cards left. and all of them have to come through me to get to the hive.
Yeah.
And it was just a realization where, like, one of them pointed at me and went, you're infected. I'm like, yep. They pointed at my friend and went, you're infected, aren't you? And he's like, yep. And they're like, we quit.
But it could all be rubbish as well, because that the lying thing is really prevalent.
Because I've only played like 1.5 games of this. Is there ever a reason for someone that isn't infected to say they are infected?
Generally not.
Generally, maybe because if you are infected, you know it's semi-co-op.
No, like, the humans have to work together to get to the hive to burn it down with the gasoline. If no one trusts you, you're going to find that very hard.
So you're
going to lose quickly.
Mm-hmm. No, you could definitely do it. I mean, if I knew Eric was infected, he's standing right in front of the hive. I've got gasoline. I want to get past him. Yeah. I'm saying, don't waste one of your infection cards getting these guys.
That's the only time. If you've got the gasoline and you've got the flamethrower, and you're like, no, don't infect me. I'm infected already.
Yeah,
let's kill this guy.
Yeah.
And while they're focusing on the last guy, you just sneak back and burn the hive.
Exactly.
Oh, that'd be cool. Yeah.
So it's always like, I mean, you're saying about that straight guy, you know, who didn't react to it. You can. Perfect to react to it completely calmly. It's equally valid just to go, ah, bullshit, I had a gasoline can and he's infected me. You could have done that. You could be the host that way, and then everyone's going to go and shoot Aaron in the face because you just thought he infected him, right? Brilliant.
We had a fantastic game where the host was doing pretty good hiding out. He tries to infect me. I give him a gas can, so I'm not infected. I'm like, yep, you're infected. And he's like, no, I'm not. And I'm like, yeah, you are. And then the other person on the other side of the table accuses me of being infected. I'm like, I'm not infected. I'm a damn human. And he's like, I don't believe either of you. I'm like, oh, dear God. And what happened is the host infects the fourth person at the table, who then infects me. And then the host infects me again. So I'm like...
And
at this point, the human's got all the gas cans and he's about to make a run for the hive. And I'm like, okay, cool. Everyone get in his way. So I go to move into him and I trade him an infection card and he gives me a gas can. I'm like, oh no, like I can't infect him. And I'm like, oh, don't worry. The host has got this. He's between me and the hive. And so the human makes a run for it and he runs straight past the host. And I'm like, and so the human runs into the hive and burns it down. So the three infected players are like, what happened? What? And the host turns around and goes, I ran out of infection cards. And I'm like,
I've got no juice left.
And it's like
no infection juice.
The humans won, and it was such a surprise. And I was like, if you didn't have any infection cards, why didn't you say so? And he was like, because I didn't want him to know we were all infected.
Is this the guy on his Game Boy?
No, this is a different game.
I'm thinking it's the guy in the Game Boy. I hate that guy.
Everyone hates that guy.
But the final story for this has got to be, not my story, it's Dave's story.
Yeah.
But I think it's
can I tell my story quickly first?
Yeah,
The reason I didn't think this game was any good was because I somehow managed to access the computer in the first two turns.
Yeah.
Only two people had traded, and we did a heat scan, there were two people infected. We're like, you guys are infected.
Oh, well, yeah.
And the game was over.
But that's it, you got to get them before they get you then, isn't it? Yeah. So, yeah.
We'll play it again.
That was the other thing about the game. The host is vulnerable and has to hide out. He can't just go around infecting people.
Yeah. So if you can get to the computer and do it first, brilliant. That's a strategy.
Yeah,
so it's Dave was trying to build trust with somebody, and he said, look, it turned out they were both humans in the end. You know, they're both clean, not infected. Dave goes, you've got a gun. I've got some bullets. Those are the infected guys. Let's go kill them. We've got a trade now. I'll give you some bullets. So he gave him the bullets. The guy gave him whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The guy interpreted that as, you're trying to build my trust, therefore you must be the host, loaded the gun and shot him.
And they were both uninfected.
But I would shoot Dave every time.
Actually, remind me of another game.
I don't trust Dave.
I started as the host, and I had trouble infecting people, and then I picked up a gun and some ammo. And so I was like, I'm the host, and now I'm just running around shooting people. Don't build trust, just shoot them.
Like, I've got a gun and bullets. And they're like, come here.
But there was...
It's pretty obvious though, because everyone sees you open fire on there, so you really show your colours.
Yeah, but there was like two people
way.
Were dead. They didn't have enough gas cans. The hive was on the other. It was behind a locked room they couldn't get to. Everything was going bad for the humans, and I turn around and just start shooting somebody. And they're like, "What are you doing? I'm human." I'm like, "Yeah, I know." And it's just that everyone at the table was just like,
"Oh my god!" No, the penny dropped.
I'd be happy with that though, because then I know who I've got to get. You know?
Yeah, of course. But then they realise I'm the only one with gun. I'm the only one with the ammo. And I'm the one that's standing between them and the
running
hive.
Awkwardly down the halls, trading gas with each other, not doing anything.
But you only get you get one shot every time for free, don't you? Ammo gives you like two shots or something.
No, it's
something like
you
that.
You need ammo to shoot.
Mm.
The gun just allows you to shoot into the next room over.
Ah, right. Yeah.
Can you just kill someone with a bullet in your hands?
Your android comes with a gun automatically.
Oh, your android's got a gun.
You have two players, a human and an android. Human has a flamethrower, android has the gun.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I remember.
So you need bullets to fire,
mm-hmm.
but the scope allows you to shoot further, and the gun allows you to shoot twice.
Yeah, cool. That's it.
I also love this game. It's great if you're like, if you like the Aliens movies type feel. Like that's you're trying to go through a base, you're trying to burn it down. It's you versus the game a lot of the time. There is a limited amount of resources, but that the host killing you is just hilarious.
Yeah, there are a lot of games that you play that don't have the feel. Like, Catan, it doesn't feel like you're building anything. Dominion doesn't feel like you have a squire and, like,
Resistance,
a lookout.
You don't have anything to build.
Yeah, you don't really have much to do. But this one, you you feel...
It's good.
I need to go here and search for items. I need to forage. I need to scavenge.
I think that's why...
I need to shoot someone that I don't trust, you know?
I think that's why I really went for this game, because it's really immersive.
Games by feel.
Yeah. It was really immersive, and you're in the moment, and you're thinking... And you're looking around the table, and you're really starting trying to read people and, mm-hmm. and wonder what they're up to, and I really enjoyed that.
It feels very much like the Resistance, but with a lot more structure. There's a lot more game to it.
And you get to move tokens around,
and there's a challenge,
and you can be silly as long as you don't show your cards. But you can be silly. You can go, he's this, he's that, and start yelling and making accusations. All that sort of stuff makes the game more interesting.
Yeah.
But it's also, you'll show your hands. Maybe you've got to be careful with what you do, because people might misread things.
I must admit, it's definitely a game you remember. Whether good or bad, you will remember playing this game.
Yeah, I'd safely say you're going to get more good games than bad games. It's good that you both had bad games, really.
And one bad game and five good ones, I'd say that's a winner.
All right.
It's like magic.
So the final...
Get mana screwed, hate it.
Yeah, that's it. It's like a...
Win a draft? Oh my God.
You're the greatest
in
the
world. This is the best
world.
Thing in the world.
Yeah. So the last game that we'll do today is...
Betrayal at House on the Hill.
Betrayal at House on the Hill. Yes.
This is kind of like...
Set in a house.
We've stepped these up a little bit. We've gone Resistance, which is just social interaction only, to Panic Station, which is social interaction and you're building and exploring and stuff. To Betrayal at House on the Hill, which is all exploring.
And I suppose in your little levels, this might be like Resistance is a lower priced game.
Mm-hmm. Panic Station's middle price. Betrayal?
Nice
top
box.
Expensive. Top level. Wow, perfect.
Yeah. Oh, man.
It's as if we planned it.
And we didn't.
Well, but now people think we planned it, because I said it's as if we planned it.
High five.
Yeah. Oh, that was awkward. Two different awkward high fives.
That was like... that was a high ten. And then hands connected at a different time.
Another one. Self measure. Self five.
All right. So that was awkward. All right. Betrayal
at House on the Hill. This game is a lot of fun. It plays 3 to 6 people. I think playing with 3 would be miserable. But 3 to 6 people. We've always played it. No, it might even be more.
No, three sounds nasty.
3 to 7?
Yeah, that nice odd number that they like.
3 to 7, I think it is. 3 to 7 people. You're all intrepid explorers of varying ages and ethnicities.
Backgrounds.
That's what I meant.
Professions. Yeah.
It gives you a little backstory on your character cards. You generally give them out randomly. Little figurines that represent you.
Yeah.
And you are placed in the lobby of a haunted house, which you're all there as a group for some unknown reason. You... go explore the different rooms of the house. To begin with, there's only the lobby.
It used to be a McDonald's franchise, and you were just looking for a snack, all of you. And you walked into the foyer and you went, it's another haunted McDonald's.
I think it's more like Scooby-Doo, like just five of you just turn up to random places just because.
Your car breaks down in the middle of the night.
And you find
out. You decide to go to the creepy house instead of going to the payphone.
And you find out that you're the dog.
Yeah.
No.
And of course, in this strange car, you've got a librarian, a professor, a child of 8 years old. Yeah, just like a variety.
The child. The strange medicine woman who's just hanging out with you for some
and
reason.
And the paranormal investigator, because you always need one of those.
Always.
Yeah. It's like, why did you happen to be? You never that's the thing in life. You never bump into those guys, do you?
No, paranormal
but when investigators. You do, when you do, you'll be like, I'm caught in a game. This is going to end badly.
Again.
Yeah, so you're in the foyer of this house. What are you going to do?
When you start off.
Just go out the front door.
Who knows?
Leave.
What
it's haunted.
Do?
I'm going to leave. No
the
point.
The door locks mysteriously behind you.
I'd better explore every square inch of this house and find out its secrets.
Yeah. So the first time you get to roll dice. No, you don't. You have a movement speed. You've got different stats on your character card. None of them are particularly important until it asks you to test them a bit later.
Yeah.
You can move as many rooms as you have speed. If you have three speed, you can move through three rooms. But if you come into a room...
Go upstairs, downstairs, use the lift.
Downstairs,
yeah.
Through the mystic elevator.
Yeah.
If you go through a doorway into a room, you draw a tile from the...
Event
the
deck
stack.
Sort of thing, is it? Yeah.
Event deck.
It's like an event deck, though, isn't it?
Because
an event. Oh, there's two decks, isn't there? There's like a.
There's three. There's an item deck, an omen deck, and a event deck.
Oh, is so you were laughing at me saying it was an event deck.
Oh, I was thinking of the magic event deck. So there is an event
deck.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So I just went up a rung in the pod.
Egg on my face.
So you draw the activity deck.
So you draw the room tile, which is randomly distributed. On the back of the tile, it says which levels it can go on. So there's the top level, there's the basement level, and there's the ground level.
Right.
So you're going to start off on the ground level. So you pick up the first ground level tile that you see, stick it into that room. If there is a symbol on it, you draw the corresponding item card from that deck and you get that card in your hand, or resolve its thing if it's an event of some kind. And they're always the classic horror story scenarios. Yeah. A face comes out of the wall and you feel really shocked for a second.
And there's a raven cawing from somewhere. But
a raven
cawing. There's no windows.
Blood drips down the wall.
Blood drips down the walls. You get trapped in a spider web. You find a dog. That's actually one of the scenarios. Yeah, yeah.
Lady Gaga just released a new album and it's playing and you can't get away.
Test your sanity.
Throw yourself from a window.
So you find all these different rooms in the house. They've got items, omens, or events in them. If there's an event, you just resolve it. Usually test your sanity. It says you hear screams from afar. Test your sanity. If you pass, you roll dice equal to your sanity level. The dice is very interesting. It's made of blanks, ones, and twos. Only, so two of each one.
But what's it actually made of is the question.
It's just animal bones.
Animal?
Animal bones. Human bones.
I heard it was whittled out of just homeless people's bones.
Well, I thought it was whittled out of an Indian graveyard.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because haunted houses are always
built
in Indian graveyards. Always.
Those guys were dying everywhere, weren't they?
build a house.
That's probably bad PC because they kind of were.
They actually were dying everywhere.
Yeah, they were having a merry time in whatever America was called before land, and then just, you know, Europe landed and was going, let's just kill everybody.
These guys are not, turkey, delicious.
Tastes like chicken.
It's like, no. Carry on. So you do these events, test your sanity. If you pass, you gain one in a stat. And if you don't pass, you lose one in a stat, or something happens, you drop your items or whatever.
Classic RPG stuff.
Classic RPG kind of thing.
But what happens if it has a little logo in the corner?
If it has a little logo on the corner.
Yeah, the card.
Yeah, it can be an omen or an item.
Yeah.
Items you carry with you until you drop them, or you can trade them to people, or just drop them on the
floor.
Or
you desperately need them because something happens.
And they're beneficial.
Yeah. And omens are very interesting. Every time you...
Ooh, omens.
Omens.
That's an owl.
That was an owl.
Yeah.
That's omen.
There were bats.
That's omen. The owl.
Seven Land Hand in stereo.
I'll run around the room and do that through all the mics. That'd be awesome. You get in your headphones. If you pick up an omen, it does generally the same thing as an item, except it's more spooky.
Yeah.
So it's like a rabbit's foot or demonic dice or something along those lines.
Yeah.
And then if you have an omen, you tick up the omen counter and then you roll a big handful of seven dice. If the amount that you roll on those dice, remember it's only zeros, ones, and twos, if it's equal to or more than the... Equal to or less? Equal to or less than... the haunt begins, and the haunt is a different part of the game where someone betrays your group, and you don't know who it is until you found enough omens from exploring these rooms in the house, and then the scenario happens. So generally you're exploring with your friends, going through the different levels, going up and down, you fall down a coal chute, you hang out in the basement for a bit, find a creepy pentagram
and everybody's chamber. Friends. And
of course,
and you're thinking you're doing the best for everybody.
You leave the 8-year-old boy to go explore upstairs, and he like falls down to the basement, and he's fine. And then he finds a dog, and then the crazy witch lady is just hanging out in a surgery, and you're just finding items and buffing your stats. And then suddenly you find this omen, and it's like a scared little girl in one of the rooms. You roll the dice, and suddenly there's seven omens, and you roll less than the amount of omens, and then the haunt begins. And this is a separate part of the game. It comes with two books. One is called The Trader's Tome, and the other is The Survivor's Handbook. The Trader's Tome is has got a little grid at the front, and you correspond the room that the haunt happened in with the item that was found, and it gives you one of 50 scenarios in the book.
So cool.
It's like the first time we played this, we were just blown away by how cool it was.
It's just so much detail.
Yeah, it's just everything. And then the scenario, I think the first time we played was you found a raving madman, and he turns out to be a necromancer, and he kills you and resurrects you as a zombie, and then all in different rooms of the house, zombies just come up, and there's no monsters or anything in the house until this point. Yeah. You're like, what am I going to use this gun for? And he's hanging out.
Zombies everywhere.
Oh, good. And then the traitor goes to read his scenario in a different room from the traitor's tome. The survivors all group together and read their survivor's handbook. It tells you what happened. So a madman has resurrected his family in this haunted house or whatever. And each of the 50 scenarios is different. Sometimes it's the person that discovered the haunt. Sometimes it's the person that's closest to the door. Sometimes it's half of you. Sometimes it's none of you. Sometimes it's all of you apart from one of you.
Yeah.
And so you can win as the traitors. You can win as the survivors. You can just die sometimes.
There's not always just one traitor. Sometimes
not always just
variable
one.
Amounts.
Yeah, one of them there was two. And then one of them it was... I think... There were more and more, like the house started falling away, and if you fell into the house, you became a traitor as well. So there's the classic infection kind of scenario as well.
Yeah.
And then, so you get given a secret objective for how to win the game as the survivors, and the traitor is also trying to do something. But you don't know what each other's objectives are. It doesn't tell you in the book. So a lot of that tension comes, they come back and everyone's like, oh! And you start taking your turns again as normal, except now you've got this objective to fulfill. And these zombies, every time you move, they like lurch slowly towards you, and you try and dodge them around corridors and that sort of thing. And this is just one of the 50 scenarios.
Yeah.
We had to trap the zombies in 4 different specific dead-end rooms in the house.
Right.
So we were just like running down corridors, and he's like, why are you going down there? That's not the way to the exit, because he thought that we had to leave.
Yeah.
And we just trap a zombie in the room and like, you know, roll a speed test to make sure that you can escape. And then you trap the zombie in the room, and then he finds out your scenario, so he's just trying to send his zombies after you in a certain way. And the game is just oozing flavor, like every single thing that
you can
do
hear it just in the description of it, can't you? It's just like there's loads of stuff going on there.
So much stuff.
Yeah, I played a game where there was, I think it was only 3 of us playing, and I was standing right next to someone as they drew the omen and turned themselves into a vampire.
Oh, God.
So I immediately got bit, and then we just chased the person down and just destroyed them. I think it was relatively quick when it happened as well, so we didn't have any gear either.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It sounds like the game could be easy. Like you're running around, you're getting lots of items, lots of omens, and no one's rolling low. And so you're really well prepared for whatever happens.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just like someone, whoops, I rolled nothing. And then
the haunt breaks early.
And it's just
and no one has
so
any
quickly.
Items. I've like failed 2 speed tests, so I can only move 1 room at a time. And the zombie just punches me and I die.
I think that was something to do with the movement of, you know, whether the vampire got extra speed or strength or something from as soon as I got vamped. Yeah. Because, the chase down was just...
If he feeds on you, it
could have been something like that.
What I love about this game, which is different to the other two that we've spoken of, is that you're all on the same side until the haunt begins.
Yeah, which is quite different to the other two
games. First
half
of the game, you're all collecting items and helping each other. Then the second half... Like you said, it could be one trader, it could be many, it could be no one.
And
then
you never know which scenario you're going to get. So
you don't know who you
can't,
you know,
you can't just
clump
purposefully, together. Like, I'm going to go my own way,
because
you never know who you're going to have to help.
Yeah.
Like, even Panic Station, you know there's at least one traitor.
There's at least one somewhere.
After the first round of turns.
Yeah, so you kind of immediately don't want to hang around with people in Panic Station. You kind of keep your distance or watch what everyone else is doing. But this one, you're sort of thinking, well, safety in numbers perhaps, but then as soon as someone...
Or you split up to explore as much as possible, but kind of stay close together to help each other.
Yeah, because it was definitely to my detriment that I was standing in the same room with that one. You know, I didn't know how it was going to play out.
Yeah.
I was thinking, as far as other games that are similar to this, you could go if you're into your horror-themed games, which I definitely am, you know, like Arkham Horror, Eldritch, those sort of things, Mansions
Arkham
of
Horror
Madness.
And Mansions of Madness, like this, but way more complicated.
Yeah, I think more Mansions of Madness is a bit of a narrative, isn't it?
About three times so far. It's a fantastic game. It's not so much betrayal. It is literally heroes versus the monsters.
The monsters, yeah.
But someone's more like someone plays the DM for the game. Yeah. I think it's more the horror theme of it. You know, if you like the idea of going into a haunted house, if you like, and you get the excitement,
the Cthulhu mythos, the whole Lovecraftian stuff, anything that involves Scooby Doo, not the ridiculous
Scooby Doo and Lovecraft together forever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But investigating haunted houses and then having your limbs torn off by zombies, anything like
that. Love it.
I do that.
If you like that sense of mystery, like some people go to Kuala Lumpur. What's going to happen?
I fight zombies.
you're that big abomination one.
Yeah, that's
always remember that.
Yeah,
it's just going to be you.
That's me.
Your weird head on top of that pile of bodies.
don't like being shorter than anyone else. All right.
But this game is sweet. Couldn't recommend it more. It's just a lot of fun. One of the best sessions we had. We put on a spooky music soundtrack, lit candles, and did the whole thing. And some creepy shit happened because, like, when a howling wind blows through you and cuts to the bone, like a door just slammed open. We're like, oh my god!
Yeah,
and like, there was no one else in the house, and it was quite dark.
Yeah. Like when we kicked off the pod today, and there's all the
there's a weird tapping from inside the walls.
Yeah, and
three taps on the walls, and then we're talking about betrayal.
Yeah, the house on the hill. A bit creeped out.
All right. So that was betrayal. Aaron's top 10. Here it is, number 10.
Number 10.
What's the number 10 traitorous thing to do whilst gaming? Or
sticky dice.
Sticky dice.
I don't know what this means, David. Tell us.
No, neither do I. I'm excited. What is it?
All right. It was sticky / diseased / gunky
gross
dice.
Food covered dice.
Yeah, it's like when you're all playing and someone's got the fingers in the Coke and the mouth and the chips and then they roll a dice and they go, oh, well, that's what I got. Now, what are you going to do, Aaron? And they pass the dice over and you pick them up and you go I just caught three exotic diseases I can't even let go of them when I try to roll.
I somehow got dengue fever from touching
these
dice.
You're trying to rub the Cheetos dust off.
Yeah.
They're stained orange now.
That is sticky dice. Yeah. Never do that.
Cheetos should make dice. I would buy those.
You'd just eat them, though, wouldn't you?
I have friends who like eating at the table while board gaming, but the one we have
always
is...
always about it.
Your cards.
Clean fingers. Always clean fingers.
Always clean fingers. Yeah.
And while they eat at the table, they're very neat and tidy, thankfully.
You've got a card hand and a Cheetos hand.
Yeah.
Don't get it mixed up.
No, we have banned Cheetos from the table.
Yeah. Banned Cheetos? Whoa, that's harsh.
Any chips that... very
fine
dusty
dust.
Yeah, it's just
we could do a whole episode on game of
sticky
food.
Dice. That was number 10.
Because they say I won't touch anything, and then there's a big orange thumbprint on your card, and you're like,
yeah.
No. Number two.
Time to buy another game. At number not number two.
Number two.
Number nine. We just did number 10.
Number two on the list, but number nine.
But number nine. It's Aaron's chose his own way through this, so that gives you an indication that number one might not be that great. Right, number nine.
If you are playing a game where you need a tape measure, 3 inches is 3 inches, buddy. Don't move it anymore. Don't, nudge it a little bit further with, a pen or, your finger or your elbow or something. Or, knock it down and be like, oh, sorry, and just put it a little bit closer. I'm within firing range now. And you're like, I swear you weren't last time.
Yeah, we're talking in inches. I moved it 2 mil extra. Yeah, so mils is a different world, man.
Whatever. 3 inches, 2 millimeters. 3 inches
is 3 inches.
And half a litre.
Yeah. How long is 3 inches?
My penis is rough.
I have two sides to this. Both of them are funny. There's one which
is the judge of that.
There's the guy that just moves it and goes, yeah, that looks about right.
I don't want to play that guy.
And the other one is the one that measures it perfectly. And he measures it from the front right pinky toe to the front right pinky toe exactly 3 inches further.
Play that guy.
That's better, right?
Not a single millimeter.
You want accuracy.
Yeah. You get the guys that do measure from the front of the model to the back of the model and you see squeak a little bit more. Yeah,
it's always
25 mil further.
I get a bit frustrating when they get really pedantic. It takes them 40 seconds to move one model and you're looking at your watch going, I had to be home an hour ago.
Yeah. All right. Number three.
Number three. Eight.
Oh, shit. I did it then, didn't I? This is the worst. Who numbered these? You numbered them.
You numbered these.
I did, didn't I?
I literally just renumbered mine so that I wouldn't get confused. Okay, number eight.
Number eight on your list, right.
Hate to be sexist. You know, you all know how sexist I am, but yeah, girls in trader games, oh my God, they will use everything to their advantage to take over. I was playing a Game of Thrones board game with a group of friends of mine, one of whom it was his first time playing any sort of board game. Literally any sort of board game outside of Monopoly.
Well, completely.
And so he didn't know what was going on. He was giving his orders out willy-nilly. But it somehow got to a point where it was between me and my girlfriend at the time. And it was we were pincering in on this castle. And he was holed up in there. We rallied him out. And I had one turn to hold this castle, and I was going to move some forces up somewhere else.
Yeah.
And she's like, why don't you support me when I attack his castle this turn? And I was like, don't do that. Why would you help her over me? And she's like, oh, you know, why not? I was like, why not help me? Why not help me? He's like, oh, I guess I'll just help her. I was like, why? Literally, why? And I didn't want to say it, but it was because she asked in a nicer voice than I did.
Yeah. You know, if it was medieval times, you're allowed to slap her in the face with your gauntlet.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is probably why...
Or a mace of
this
some
is why she's your ex now. Right?
Yeah.
And
so he, a very good friend of mine, betrayed me in Game of Thrones. And I lost that game specifically because he added one more support to her army. I got right out of the castle, lost the game, crushing defeat.
And then broke up with your girlfriend.
And then we broke up a few months later.
And so I think I covered this in the intro. The most beautiful human qualities is either trust or boobs.
Troobs.
And this is what happened. You got troobed.
Bust.
Troobed or bust.
So you need to go back now.
This is why you got done, isn't it?
Right. Got troobed.
Okay, we're all up to speed now. Number seven.
Number seven, traitorous instincts in games. Traitorous instinct from Magic. It's where someone casts a big creature, like say Theros. You like cast a big Vulpine Goliath, 6/5. It's going to stop all their attackers from killing you for a turn, and then you can stabilize with a big kill spell next turn, and they just take control of it and beat you to death with it. Your giant fox can just hit you over the head with it. And
Portent of Betrayal.
Yeah, Portent of Betrayal.
Plus, there's a new one as well, isn't there?
There's a new one.
Is that the one you just quoted?
No, Traitor's Instinct was in Gatecrash. I killed many a person with Traitor's Instinct.
Yeah.
It was very traitorous.
I like this one because it shows a good side of Magic where it's like you can never absolutely be sure. You could get your Stomper out and then he can...
Yeah, completely. Yeah.
Totally.
It's fantastic. And you never know, they'll steal it and give it Double Strike or something. You're like, I wouldn't have won if I hadn't played my giant thing. I gave you an avenue to victory.
But you know, they've probably been sitting there with that one trader card in their hand the whole game, just waiting to play.
Let's not open the Magic tin. We're all bristling with Magic excitement. It's been pre-release weekend.
One of the gods.
Yeah, I know. We can't talk about it for another fortnight. Okay, number six on Aaron's top 10 traitorous list.
If you are a traitor in a game and you are very bad at being a traitor, like you give it away, it ruins it for everyone. How is everyone going to play the traitor game and be involved and be...
I had this with a guy in Panic Station. Yeah. One number one rule is don't show your cards to anyone. He was sitting there at a table leaning over going... look. And I was going...
And he was infected?
I don't know because I can't remember where he was at, but... I just looked at him in the eye above his cards and just said, I'm not looking at the cards. You're going to run the game.
It's not the point of the game.
He was thinking, it's like, oh, this would be super clever. Let's just break the whole game. It's like, no, that's just shitty.
Yes. You play the games are set up so that you have fun if you play the game as it's meant to be played.
Yeah.
And then a lot of times they're like, oh, they break the rules, and then it just falls flat.
Be true to the game.
Yeah, the point of playing games is you adhere to the rules. It's not fun if you don't adhere to the rules. Then you're just like hanging out and just having structured thing where like you sometimes break the rules to like, who are you trying to get? There's no man to get. You're just trying to like play a game. I don't understand people that do that.
It's like trying a board game night at the Anarchist Society. Yeah.
Let's just break all the rules and just like sit around.
Hey everyone, I just won a game with all of you that you didn't even know we were playing.
I cheated and just changed the rule book so it said that I won if your name's Aaron, so that's pretty good.
Oh, that's Chris Cornell quote. If you think you've won, you didn't see me change the game that we're playing.
Oh, Chris Cornell.
Yeah. Woof, woof. That's
classic game.
James Bond theme song.
Yeah.
You know my name. Yeah, it wasn't. Yeah, it's theme for magic.
Yeah, now it is.
Number five on Aaron's top 10, a traitorous list.
One time I was playing a role-playing game and a mage didn't want to spend his... You tell it, David.
Who'd be a mage?
Who would be a mage? What a jerk.
Oh, I like mages. I am a mage. No.
Is that my story?
It's your story. I don't know.
I can't tell you that story. No, it's an epic story. Way too long for now. Mages who won't spend his last magic points to save you from death. Yeah, this, you get like little narky mages that are like, yeah, I'm going to need these magic points to do this special thing I was planning in before we went to sleep tonight, and I refreshed them. And yeah, these two magic points would save you from death, but I'm going to need them.
I need to just enchant my sword or my staff. So
A spell of sword cleaning.
Are you all right if you die?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's okay.
Just roll up a new character.
I need to save it for something.
I've actually got one that beats this. Thieves in RPGs.
We'll be the judge of that.
Thieves in RPGs that steal everything from their party mates.
Oh, jerks. I haven't played RPGs.
I was DMing a game where there
but
was
you
a
will.
Kendra.
We'll get you in one.
There was a Kendra, a small rat creature like taking stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the party members was one and he kept stealing everything. And then he sees...
Can't you just kick him out of your party? Tell him to go outside?
I was at the end, so I didn't feel it was my place. I just let the game as it is.
You're like, and the voice of God spoke from the sky and said, you're a jerk.
Even better. He saw a dragon horde and started running for it.
Yeah.
And one of the other players pulls out his bow and starts shooting him. No, with bodkin arrows, so they're blunt, so they don't kill him. But it's basically, he starts shooting him, so he hits the floor unconscious. And he comes back from getting something from the kitchen, and we're like, you fell unconscious. And he's like, what happened? And none of the rest of the party would admit. They're like,
nothing.
The dragon hit you.
Who knows?
I've just
have
opened
to deal
the,
with traitorous pieces.
I've just opened the treasure chest, and I'm reading this ancient scripture, and it says, Bob is a cunt. It's not my words.
That's weirdly specific.
It's on the scripture.
No, you open the treasure chest, and at the bottom it says, I prepared explosive runes today.
It's a blank piece of paper, but when I put it in the moon, it says you're an asshole.
As a picture of you. No, it's weird. There's a picture of your face next to
you. Yeah, a massive cock on your forehead.
Don't try reading it. Only I can read it.
Yeah, those elves are crazy good. Yeah.
Cock on your head.
But yeah.
Number four, traitorous gaming things. Aaron.
Traitorous gaming things. So you set up in your teams, you got an odd number of people, whatever, four versus three, and then you suddenly realize that the four team is crushing. So someone on the four team has to leave their team and go to the other team to make it a bit more even.
Yeah, that's Bob.
Everyone on the four team, asshole, getting on, doing really well, and then they get punished for doing well, and then you're all friends, and then one of you just has to leave.
That sounds like an awesome gamer story, but in brackets at the end of that.
No, don't say it. No. This didn't happen to me in volleyball.
It's volleyball.
Seven in hand, we don't discriminate active games and sedentary games.
Volleyball.
But volleyball is
going to
be very
fun. Volleyball quote, everyone. Let me put this in.
Shut up, dude.
Oh, we were really stretching for this top 10, weren't we? Right, hey, number three.
Did you see the Star Wars? It's the
worst. Yeah. Lots of feedback for the top 10 Star Wars things.
Hey, your Star Wars top 10 sucked.
Yeah, because only three of them were Star Wars. The other seven were just...
The rest were very bad ports and franchises.
Yeah, you were playing with the lightsaber a little bit too much when you wrote that one. All right, number three.
Number three.
These last three will be good, though. These are awesome.
Yeah.
I'm refusing to really read them, but you're going to finish on a strong
number
point.
Three.
Yeah.
Someone's like, hey, can I borrow your copy of Panic Station? And I'm like, sure.
Mizzium Skins.
Yeah,
I'll have three of those.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I'll give you straight back to you.
So someone borrowed by Panic Station game, and then they're like, yeah, sweet, I'll return it to you whenever. And they return it to you, and you're like, hey, I swear that there were bits and pieces
little
of this
cards
that
inside
weren't
this
missing
empty
when
tin
you
box.
Borrowed it. Yeah. What's this tin box for? It's full of cookies now.
They don't return it. You're like, can I have my Panic Station back? And they're like, I don't have that.
What?
And they're like, I didn't borrow that. And you're like, yeah, you did. Or, no, I gave it back. And you're like, well, I can't find it.
You must have lost it then. And you're like, fuck you.
This empty tin box looks just like that game of Panic Station. Go, well, enjoy your new lunchbox, Aaron.
People who borrow stuff and forget about it, you are the worst.
Yeah, you are. Number two, traitorous things to do as a gamer.
People who don't take it seriously enough. People who come...
Right, yeah.
People who want to come...
Just want to have fun, chill out.
Like, why do you care about the... They're like... They attack... Oh. they attack you in Game of Thrones or they do something in the Resistance and you go, oh, what did you do there? It just ruined it for everyone. And they're like, no, oh, what does it matter? It's just a game.
Shut up. Shut up. Shut up.
We're not taking the game too seriously, but you've just ruined the game for me.
Yeah. Like, there's not taking it too seriously and being like, whoa, man,
no,
whoa.
But even worse is that you accuse them of ruining the game and they're like, it's just a game, don't take it so seriously. And you're like,
why the fuck are you playing?
Exactly.
Somewhere between Rules Nazi and this guy.
Yeah, this
guy. That's where you need to be.
That's where everyone should exist. Yeah. I mean, it's a spectrum, and if you're at that end or that end, you're the worst.
I don't like this guy because he takes all the fun out of it. Mm. I'm playing games to have fun. You follow the rules to play the game. If you're not going to follow the rules, you're
a traitor.
Yeah.
You're a traitor to the rules.
And you might not be wearing shoes, and you might smell, and you might... cough on people's
faces. I'll be taking my government for explosives if I see you around there.
Before number one, my honourable mention, being smelly.
Being smelly is a very traitorous thing.
Top 10 traitorous gamer trait, honourable mention, being smelly.
Yeah, because it's hard to play against somebody who just reeks. Yeah. Throws you off your game.
Yeah.
All right.
Start thinking about Cheetos.
Cheetos. All right, top 10, number one, traitorous thing to do as a gamer.
It's not exactly the traitorous thing to do as
a gamer.
It's
the most traitorous thing to do.
It's one of the most traitorous things, but everyone kind of always knows who the traitor is. I think that's the most traitorous thing that you can do.
So to be the ultimate traitor is to expose yourself as the traitor.
Expose yourself. Just say, expose yourself, whip it out at the table, your traitorousness, that is.
You have it written on there.
Yeah. By the way, I'm a traitor.
It says tit. Like, oh. There you go, just give it a minute. There it is, traitor.
I have a strange issue with this one because people always accuse me of being the traitor.
Eric is a traitor.
Even when I'm not. Yeah, exactly. But I have said that I've got a grin, an evil grin.
That's my smile.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm just smiling to be happy and people are like, ha, you've got an evil grin. I'm like, I'm trying to look sad.
When we booked this podcast in for 7:30 in the evening, at 7:31 when Eric wasn't here, we're like, fucking traitor.
What a traitor.
Yeah, what a traitor.
Hey, I've got 7:26.
What clock were you using?
4 minutes.
Yeah, is that Eastern Standard Time or Western Standard Time?
Burn.
Yeah. Hong Kong time is what we were using.
Hong Kong time. Always 5 minutes fast.
Yeah, I always get accused of being the traitor. And everyone thinks it's always so obvious who the traitor is. But it's just because I'm talking. I just talk a bit. When we play these games, people are like, it's you. And I'm like, no, I'm just talking a lot to defend myself. No, honestly, honestly. But I would say exactly the same thing if I was the traitor, so I guess that doesn't really work.
Well, one of the quotes that comes up in my gaming group is, aha, that's something a spy would say. Because it's like,
literally everything.
Literally, you're playing Resistance, like, I'm Resistance, and the first accusation is, aha, that's something a spy would say. And you're like, oh, gee.
I played with my brother who doesn't play a lot of any of these games, and we were just playing with five of us. And as soon as we gave out the cards for Resistance, he looked at it and I was like, you're a traitor! And he was like, oh.
So he's supposed to do it. And you're like, oh, wow, no.
And so we're like, cool, okay, he's a spy, and now we're just going to find the one other one that he winks at.
You
really obviously.
To say that your brother's 5 years old and you just bullied him horribly.
Yeah, right. he just sat with his head like on his hands for the rest of the game.
Okay, we're up to...
Top 10. That was good.
That was top 10. That was good. I look forward to the negative feedback on that from... who was the mate? The Star Wars fans,
Mr. Doan.
Tweets and news. Neats
and
twos. Neats and twos. So we've got progress on the Seven Land Hand Extra competition, which is the big question, which Seven Land Hand would you keep? And we've had a few responses, but we've got another fortnight of this to go.
Excellent.
And, Dorian Johnson, as usual, strong contender
What a guy. Number one fan?
Number one fan.
Number one fan.
And just to give everyone a heads up, Eric will get some of this. We've got Seven Land Hand swag coming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Official Seven Land Hand merchandise.
Official.
When I was in Kuala Lumpur, they were already flogging like fake Seven Land Hand merchandise.
Were they?
So
bastards.
They did it before we even got the official.
I hadn't
one.
Even
so
done up
the
counterfeiters are really on the ball now.
Yeah, really
hadn't even done up the
it.
Artwork myself. I just copied
and
it off what
just,
they were going
to
do.
I bought some of the market. It was comfortable.
They're all over the Facebooks and Twitters. So they know what's trending.
They know what's trending.
They know what's trending.
And was it? Did you just get the regular ones or the ribbed ones?
Ribbed.
Yeah, ribbed. Of course, great. So I don't know. Do we want to give any of the? We've got a bit of time up our sleeve, so we could just give maybe if Dorian Dorian's got a very good answer for what Seven Dorian
Land is. Let's find out Dorian's one and we'll decide.
Yeah, Dorian said it's for standard because he was on the ball. He realized, even though initially I hadn't said it, it is a standard Seven Land hand that we're looking at.
This is in Magic, by the way. We're not talking about in other games.
A Magic Seven Land hand, which what would you keep? And he said, so in standard, I'd keep Maze's End, two Muta Vaults, and four different gates. This is assuming that I have the rest of the gates in the deck. If not, this will be quite awkward. Yeah. He says, I don't play Modern yet or Legacy ever, so this will probably be my only entry. Don't be like that. Don't talk yourself down, Dorian. You could get in. You've got 2 weeks to do like
I just thought of a really good one, but don't I can't say it.
Don't say it. Yeah.
Friends and family members. I'm neither a friend or family member.
You know what?
Because I'm just me.
Get in touch with Dorian. Get him to do it.
Split the prizes.
There you go.
I thought you were about to say, I don't have friends or family members.
I don't have friends or family.
So, yeah. So what's your reaction to that? Aaron, what's your reaction to that? A Maze's End, two Muta Vaults, that gets you to three and four different gates?
Sure, I hate to be that guy, but you don't play Muta Vault in your Maze's End deck because...
It's a different win condition, isn't it?
It's a different win condition. You need creatures. You just fog in Maze's End. You don't need creatures to block with or attack with. So.
It just sounds a bit slow, even
with all that. If they were like... Even... Some Scrylands maybe chuck in there. Yeah, but I don't think you play the Scrylands in the Maze's End deck. The Maze's End probably.
You need the gates. You need all the gates.
You need all the gates. But you can't start activating it until like turn 5, so that's a bit rough.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's a 7-land hand game, you know. So, you know,
seven land hand game is always difficult to play.
Yeah. All right, so that's
pretty good.
That's a strong entry.
I liked it.
I thought Muta Vault would be all over it, you know, and he's done well because he hasn't just gone for the four Muta Vaults.
Muta Vault X.
Because that's a really easy answer.
Also expensive.
Yeah, I would like to point out one person maybe for comedy reasons. Adam, when asked for which seven land hand he would keep, he's gone four Shocklands or four Scrylands. So in either scenario, he's still only got four. So come on.
Which seven land hand would you keep and then mulligan to four and then keep that one?
Maybe that's it. Maybe Adam's just showing how strong he is. He's going, no, I'd keep mulliganing until my seven land hand is actually four.
A four land hand.
Guaranteed to get either four one or four the other. Never a mix.
Every time.
Man, yeah. Tip of the hat to Adam there, actually. Yeah. Well, we're doing it. So Dave... Oh, Dave here. Look at this.
Dave,
store owner Dave. Game, good games, Dave.
Don't tell him that.
He'd keep three Muta Vaults. See? It's predictable.
It's too easy.
So cliche. Three Scrylands. But this is where it gets clever. One Zendikar Forest just to look at.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's a bit of charm in that answer, isn't there?
I like that one.
Yeah, moving on.
He can't win the prize, though, because he's both friend... And my father.
And he's providing the prize. It just becomes like a horrible circular thing. But he's brown-nosed up to Dorian because he's got an excellent answer.
Ah, what a jerk.
Yeah, he's trying to win from within.
Yeah.
It was an excellent answer, though.
Okay, Tim, the meat axe.
Tim.
I don't know if we read our last names, but Tim, who's a meat axe. it's his words, not mine. I don't know how meaty his axe is.
I looked at his profile picture. He's a bit of a meat axe, isn't
he? Yeah, he's, oh, man. Bro. When I've ever needed a meat axe, ring in Tim.
Isn't that just an axe? Can't every axe be used for meat? Or is it an axe made of meat?
It's an axe made of meat, for sure.
Yeah, that's what I imagined. So it's like a lamb.
Axe.
It's like a lamb chop with a little bit of the pokey bit, just whittled to a
point.
I
don't know, if it was a really heavy T-bone, you could get
you could do some work, but it's not going to chop anything. No. You're like trying to chop down a tree with a T-bone.
Tim hasn't claimed to chop anything.
It's more like a pickaxe, isn't it? Getting that bone in there.
All right. Listen, give us a reaction to this one then. He's gone four Thespian stages and three forests.
So he can copy whatever land they play with the Thespian stage. Yeah, good. That's good.
Yeah?
That's all right.
You happy with that?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Nice. It's like, I don't care what land I've got. I only care what land you've got.
Yeah, well, that's clever.
Yeah. Okay.
And he hasn't got the Muta Vault.
No Muta Vaults. Good.
Yeah, so he's not been aggro land.
Aggro land.
Yeah. And I suppose the other note I'll mention, which I'm a big fan of, because this guy's gone for a completely different angle here, is Angus.
Sure.
Seven Swamps.
Oh.
What?
Yeah. No, that's it.
That's good.
Wow, that's
Seven Swamps.
Yeah.
He didn't say what edition they were from.
No, or
they
were foiled. Like simple, two. Well, not even a number and one word answer. Mm. Seven Swamps.
So if someone pulled out Seven Swamps on me, I'd be a bit scared. I'm like, I'd be waiting for all those big black creatures.
Well, it's not going to show you though, is he? He can't. It's not like you can play them all in one hit. He's just going to go, yep, round one.
Yeah, but by the third turn, that's when you figure out the fear sets in.
That's going pass. Yeah.
Go
here. Right, here's another swamp. Pass.
And you're like, he kept a hand with seven swamps.
I'm not even going to draw a card in between. I'm just going to wait till I get the seven. Yeah, and then you're in trouble.
And you're like, what's the seventh card? Is it corrupt? Deal damage to target player equal to the number of swamps I control and gain that much life? Oh, it's just a swamp. All seven swamps.
Yeah. All right, so that's where we're at on the competition. So, if you haven't got anything in, get it in. Get it in. There's no double entendres there.
Put it inside.
Put it in. Slip it into the sleeve.
Just the tip.
Tell us what seven lands you would keep. Standard seven lands.
Standard seven lands.
Yeah, in the standard format.
Mm-hmm.
So that was all on our Facebook site, which you can get to now.
Facebook.com/7. That's the number 7. Land hand. 7 land hand.
Perfect. Thanks for that, Aaron. Tweet at 7 land hand. Any questions or anything so we can yammer on about it, whatever. We can get the appropriate expert in to answer it properly even. If it's like a proper highbrow question.
We'll employ someone.
We'll research. We'll do the research.
Give someone some.
There shall be invitations sent out.
Yeah. Oh, and here's something exciting, which I was going to do next weekend, but I found out I can't now because Aaron's jet setting somewhere again, probably.
No, I think I'm going to a festival.
Traitorous festival?
Yeah, Anyway. Festival of treason. No, festival, I heard it's a really happy festival actually.
Yes, that's right.
The
happy
anyway. Because all the actual treasoners are at the happy festival.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So for everyone at home, the happy news is, and we won't traitor them out on this, we're going to have a video coming out soon for the recent PTQ Atlanta final, and we'll have the winner... And Mr. Anthony Lee, co-commentating with Mr. Aaron Graham, you may have heard of him before. And so that'll be a video Seven Land Hand production. Whoa.
Oh, my God.
Media empire.
Moving up in the world.
Yeah. And it'll be slightly less shit than our last one, which was just a video and got hammered by everybody.
And people just talking in the background.
In the background, yes. So, yeah, we'll just go for just a sliver above that. So, yeah, look forward to that.
Zero slivers in the final.
There shall be some production. Yeah, zero slivers.
Yeah, some production. Next week, next fortnight. This is the show that we wanted to do today.
Next fortnight. Okay, so we just finished the weekend. Born of the Gods pre-releases, all six of them fully sold out. It's been hectic. It's been crazy.
Don't rush it. You've got time. How was the pre-release
weekend?
It was
really good. It was a lot of fun.
It was.
People enjoyed the shake-up it brought to the sealed format. The bombs weren't too bomby. The removal was removing things. Oh, my God. Yeah. And, it was a lot of fun was had by people. A lot of different people winning at the top tables. People losing at the bottom tables. People opening Brimazes, charging badges.
A table full of Xenagos was opened.
Man. Yeah, we'll be
get a photo of that.
Yeah,
can you be able to see that? Mm-hmm. Literally four people
all sitting next to each other, all open Xenagos.
And someone else had a Kiora in there as well. Yeah. So we had a family shot with them all. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
It was just a great vibe pre-release, I think. I was just I'm still trying to, because we're fresh out of it.
Mm.
And from, we all, you know, for those of you who might not know,
2 hours
we all ran weird shifts, all starting from the midnight shift and all that sort of stuff. So we're all over the place. But I haven't quite dissolved the whole weekend into some sort of, why it was so awesome, I really enjoyed it. It was really cool just seeing new cards come out, seeing the ones that we talked about on the spoilers, hearing everyone break down the tactics of it and how they're going to use it. I feel it's a little bit different when I was looking at the spoilers and I was thinking, that's how I'm going to use that.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm hearing people talk about it and seeing them getting used and going, oh my God, I just got so much to learn. And it's a big study fest. So really just can't wait to draft it because then I think it's the using of the cards.
I don't usually play too much sealed deck. I actually did okay over the weekend. I think I only lost like 2 or 3 games overall with 3 or 4 different sealed decks.
Yeah.
But all it does is just make me more excited to draft it because I just love drafting so much. Yeah, it's just going to shake. Because I've played quite a bit of Theros, but Born of the Gods looks like it's going to add a bit of
adrenaline. It's like a bit of an augmentation Theros, isn't it? It's like Theros, you've got a lot of good like core things available to you. Like I say, you've got your creatures and you can bestow things upon them, but now we've got a little bit more stuff that can like mess around with that a little
bit
more.
And
you've
got more tricks to play around. You've got a few more different ways to win the game. You've got some like a good mill strategy now, which is really interesting. And yeah, it's just all sorts of stuff.
I'm yeah, really the inspired thing is going to be quite interesting.
Inspired if is really, gonna be I love how inspired plays as well.
It's just whether, it's just that old question of, I was thinking about it, you know, having, I mean, I'm just doing this off the top of my head, so we can just discuss it out.
Yeah.
You know, is there enough of the inspired cards for you to, you know, as you're drafting? Because when we'll be drafting Theros and Born of the Gods, there'll be one Born of the Gods pack. First. When does that come out? It's the first one, isn't
it? First one you open, yeah.
Okay, because I was just thinking, at what stage you can, you know, if are you going to get enough inspired cards out of that draw to really make that a tactic or win tactic?
A lot of the stuff that triggers the inspired is just incidental untapping. So if you have a good combat trick that happens to untap your creature, you're also going to get the bonus for inspired as well. But something that I wouldn't recommend doing is playing stuff specifically just to tap your creature. Yeah. But they've seeded stuff in at common and uncommon so that you do get rewarded for tapping your creatures in other ways, say from Springleaf Drum, you tap it to add some mana, which means you don't have to keep attacking it, but you get the benefit of it untapping.
Yeah.
And enchantments that when you enchant them, it gives them an ability with a tap instead of needing to attack. So, like, there's a lot of different ways you can build decks. I don't even know what's strongest, because in draft it's going to be different because your decks are a lot more focused on the strategy. If no one's picking up inspired cards, you might get all of them, and then you can play all the Springleaf Drums you want.
Yeah, so otherwise you're just looking for, I'm just going to attack with this guy, there, here he is, he's tapped, now I'm going to get that benefit.
And you have to think about creatures, whether they're good without the inspired ability, because it's possible they might just die, or they might get blocked, or...
You can never rely on it. So you think at the moment the inspired stuff is going to be largely like life gain, isn't it? If you get it incidentally, it's cool.
Exactly, it's incidental.
You probably couldn't rely on it. It's also classic drafting, if you try and rely on something and someone else takes it, you're fighting over the cards.
And you get cut off from that, you've just wasted a whole pack of cards because someone was picking it up before you even looked at it.
So. That was the other thing, and again, off the top of my head, I was thinking of on the way here today in the car, I was thinking for the archetype cards, they're just generally going to... You know, like, say, the black archetype gives you death touch. Everyone has death touch, and your opponent can't get death touch. Mm-hmm. Is it going to be something about you're going to be more dependent on signals? So, like, if you see that you're getting a good flow of black cards, you're going to be thinking, all right, or green cards, you're going to be thinking, all right, not a lot of death touch around. Is that going to affect... Am I need to get death touch or stop someone else from having it?
Like,
is that going to...
The thing with the archetypes is that it just rewards you for playing them, regardless of what your other creatures are. If they have double death touch, it doesn't mean anything. And you don't really want to be just... You wouldn't play the archetype specifically because you think there's a lot of death touch around. All of those cards are just... All the archetypes, the five of them, are good regardless of whether your opponent has those things or not.
See, that's what I thought. That's where I ended up at. I was thinking, forget about, you know, the signals and everything. If you can just play it, if you're looking at one pack and you can get something that's going to give everybody death touch, then you're in a strong position.
Yeah.
It's not a matter of being a defensive thing, so it becomes more of an offensive card where you're playing it to get that ability.
Yeah, so you can play it in a deck where usually your creatures wouldn't get through their blockers, and then suddenly they remove death touch from all their guys if they had any, and you can attack and they're like, I don't want to trade my 4/4 for your stupid 2/2. But then they're put in a position where they have to decide. Like I said in our spoilers show, there are so much choice in this set.
Yeah.
Like, really good, like, inspired. You're like, should I attack with this so I get the untap thing? Or do I leave it back to block? Or do I enchant it with this thing that taps for an ability? And then all of the tribute stuff, I just enjoyed making those decisions all weekend. Like,
I love those kind of decisions because it takes it away from, like, the attacking and the removal type aspect.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And you just mess up
the whole combat system.
Which is
what Theros devolved to, really. It was a lot of attacking, blocking. There wasn't a lot of trickery and interesting blocking and then tapping it for an ability and then saving it with a thing. And then when it untaps, you get something. There wasn't a lot of that incidental... Mini strategy. I don't know, like mini games.
Sounds like the archetype's going to take all that to the next level. It's just going to mess everything up.
And
make the fight, like, make the combats really more interesting.
It's going to be like the... There's that haunted creaking again.
Seriously. It's very scary.
If you just find this podcast on the computer and next to three dead bodies of... It's just like,
We did hear something.
The ghost had probably wiped the hard drive.
If you find only two dead bodies, it wasn't me.
So I was thinking, so it sounds like it's the decision-making almost becomes like that split card thing, you know, when someone else make a decision about a tribute card on your behalf. It's the same sort of thing, you know, that you were describing. I think you're going to get a decision with, should I do A now or should I hold it back and do B later?
Yeah.
Which one's most beneficial? You've got to make them on the, those decisions on the fly. It's not something you can appraise a card for.
Yeah.
And come in and go, right, this card's going to give me A or B and I prefer A.
Yeah. And there's just some awesome stuff. I played the Hydra, Nessie and Wild's Ravager. The, and it came into play. Green foil Hydra thing.
Imperialist card.
Tribute 6. And
more haunting.
That. Yeah, more haunting. It's fucking scary. I played it, and my opponent makes the decision for what's best, all the information he's been given, which is the stuff that's in his hand, the creatures he has to block it. Doesn't have trample.
Does he want to see a 12-12, or does he want to see a 6-6?
I can deal with a 12-12 with no abilities. He's on, like, 13 or something. But he can just keep chump blocking it.
Yeah.
I'm like, I know what decision he's going to make because of the creatures he has out and how he's been playing. I'll just play it. Whatever he does, I'm happy to fight something of his. And he's like, you can have a 12-12. He attacks me back or whatever, leaves some chump blockers back. I'm like, I'll make it unblockable. He's just like, oh, I'm dead. Okay.
Yeah.
I wish I had made a slightly different decision.
Unblockable, trample, he just goes over the top and smashes him in the face. And he's like, oh, wow, I've got 2 health left.
So
I concede.
I love when your opponent makes these decisions based on all the information they've been given. But that information is kind of like, they've got to guess what you have and why you would make those plays as well. So love that stuff. It's exactly what I love.
Sometimes there's also the confusion, like, they're making a certain decision. You're like, well, how come, like, does he have a hidden card that he can... back that up with, like,
or if he top decks something, do I just lose immediately?
He's got 7 chump blockers out. You put down a 12-12. Like, he's thinking he's feeling pretty good. But I'd be thinking, like, he's just chucked down a 12-12. I can block that until the cows come home.
Yeah.
Is he going to, like, make it unblockable and ruin my day or not?
Yeah, I was watching you play and you got, I just kind of looked it up because it's a hell of a name, like, Tromocrates.
Tromocrates.
Or Tromocrates.
Tromocrates.
Tromocrates. Oh, dear.
Tromocrates.
The KR is silent, so it's just tomato.
Tomato.
Yeah, that's not like an instant math problem late in the game, isn't it? Because it's like...
can I read that?
Yeah, sure, man.
Yeah.
It's just like everybody has to... if he... Well, so now Eric stole him.
Yeah.
It's like if he...
so his rules text is he's 5 blue for an 8-8.
Yeah.
He has hexproof as a Kraken, legendary, in case that's important.
Yeah.
It's important, actually, for a couple of things in the set, which is weird. Yeah. He has hexproof unless it's attacking or blocking. So if they have any sorcery speed things, destroy target untapped creature, destroy exile target untapped creature, or whatever.
Yeah, while he's just sitting there.
Yeah. They can't do it. Yeah. So unless he's attacking, there's going to be no trickery involved. And then his other rules text is... he can't be blocked unless all creatures they control block
that's it.
Which so I love. It's like the village banding together to all fight the big Kraken.
When blocking, it's all or nothing. Like, it's going to get through unless if the entire Greek army stops this
thing. So if you get to that choice, then there's a couple of choices that happen, isn't it? Do you throw all your blockers at it? Because then your opponent, the person who's got Tremocratus, is going to be then deciding how he's going to split that 8 up, because that's probably going to be the end of him.
Yeah.
Because they know they can take him out if they're going to sacrifice that many creatures. Mm-hmm. But then they get to pick off who, don't they, as well? But so
if we go back to the 12 life and 7 chump blockers thing, this 8-8 comes out and he's thinking, well, I can either let it through and loot and I'm down to 4 health and die straight, or I could chump block with 7-1-1s and then next turn I'll take 8 health and die straight.
The weird thing about this, which has never really come up on a card before, is you can't attack past it. So if, say, you have a flyer and you want to just attack for 3 because you're going to kill him with it next turn, you can't block because your thing attacked. You need to block it with all creatures that you control. Yeah. So it's not just creatures that can block, it's all of your creatures. So you can't even attack around.
Even take it up to the next level,
if
you've got like a 7-1
if you want to
or
block
something
it.
You've buffed. Like,
Which is what they do, isn't it? It's like if I attack with this card and you block it with everybody, I'm going to go and be looking for things like they've got evasion, like the flying. That I've got a flyer. How am I going to get rid of your flyer? Here he comes, and you've got to throw it in. I'm going to take him off straight away.
Yeah, put him first in the blocking order.
Yeah.
It's like, I can't block your flyers, but I can make your flyers block me.
There's so much stuff. Like, they could leave back 10 power of blockers, so they're like, definitely killing this. I might even have a creature left. And you're like, I'll tap that. And also, they can't even block it anymore.
And if they're thinking, I've got this wide range of creatures and they
actually manage to block it, then you've got the choice of picking off whatever blocker
you
want. Yeah,
and if you have a trick or something like plus one, indestructible, they just lose the game.
have you got any cards that have come out over the pre-release weekend that, you know, have maybe surprised you?
Yeah. There's been a few that I was more disappointed by. I thought they'd be a little bit more exciting than they were. Archetype of Courage didn't do very much at all.
Which one's that?
That's the first strike. All your creatures get first strike. The white one.
They almost sound like trader cards. Like, they didn't quite live up to the expectations.
Yeah, trader card. Hence on topic. Yeah. all of your creatures get first strike. Your opponent's creatures can't have or gain first strike.
Yeah.
And it was just, it's okay. Like it's a 2/2 by itself, so you never want to be attacking with it, because a 2/2 with the first strike doesn't kill a 3/3, so they just leave a 3/3 back to block. So it costs not very much mana, and giving your whole team first strike is good, I can imagine,
one,
a lot of
one
situations.
One white for a 2/2.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We were talking about that, weren't we, about the blight.
Bile blight
mm-hmm. being a -3/-3 can... Mm-hmm. deal with most. We were talking about Brimaz at the time, so we thought, well, it's not going to deal with that.
Yeah.
But that can take, that takes care of quite a lot of cards, doesn't it?
It really does. Yeah. I played a blue-white deck, and I played turn 2 Vaporkin, which is 2/1 with flying, can only block other creatures with flying. So it's quite an aggressive card. You just want to be attacking with it because it doesn't block very well. And I was like, oh, sweet, I pulled another one. I'd play it on turn 3 with 1 white mana up, and my opponent was like, Bile Blight, which would have killed both of them. And I was like, oh my god.
Because of the same name? Because
they had the same name.
Yeah.
And Wizards said they want to do that because it makes people play more varied decks. So you don't always play 4 of something.
More constructed Detention
Sphere.
Thing.
Detention Sphere comes down, exiles all creatures with the same name.
Yeah.
And it's because they want it to push it, decks to be a bit more varied. They wanted you to be playing 2s and 3s.
Because that's the first choice, isn't it?
That's what I found for the whole Return to Ravnica thing, is that if you're building a deck, you want so much synergy that, and you want the cards to come up, so you just 4, 4, 4, 4, 4.
Yeah, because and you look at the mono black decks that have been winning all the tournaments, it's just 4 Pack Rat, 4 Desecration Demon, 4 Night Vale Spectre, 4 Grey Merchant of Asphodel.
Very aggressive as
all,
well.
Yeah, it's just old cards that just are very good if you draw them in multiples, and then you get punished by stuff like Detention Sphere and Bile Blight now. So I like that they're doing that.
Not a limited thing, though, is it?
It's not really. Yeah, it shouldn't come up very often, and if it does, you're going to get wrecked. But I had God's willing to protect my game, so it didn't matter. It was fine.
Luckily.
Scribe one.
So, yeah, it's...
I'm looking forward a lot to talking about Bond of the Gods in a couple of weeks.
We're kind of spoiling four or five
drafts in at least by then, and it'll be a lot of fun to talk about.
Yeah, and I'll be jumping in on as many as I can. I won't have 4 or 5, though, hopefully I'll have a few anecdotes of how I screwed up the first week of Bond of the Gods.
Yeah, the best anecdotes.
I suppose another... It's like more of a beginner's thing. I think of late I've been concentrating on the mental stamina for it, because I've found that... with 3 matches made up of 3 games.
Yeah.
If I have a long game in any of the match 1 or 2, I'm spent by match 3.
Yeah.
Also, I'm pretty much spent by match 3 anyway, but it depends when I get a long game as to when I'm out. But I'm thinking the more you play, the more situations occur where you go, oh, in this situation, I will do this.
Yeah,
so there's less mental burn, and therefore you get the stamina to go longer.
That's exactly what it is. And the more you play draft and the more you play limited, you get used to seeing the same situations over and over again.
Yeah.
They have a 2/2, and they attack into your 3/3, and they have 3 mana up, and you're like, I'm not walking into that. Yeah. I'll take 2 damage. And you don't even think about it anymore.
Yeah.
You just take 2 damage because you realize that that's...
That's a
not
decision you made like
important.
A month ago, and you know how to do it now.
You made it like a year ago, and it's those heuristics. You play limited, and you get better at limited by recognizing those patterns and using those heuristics, and you only concentrate on the decisions that are the most important. When they make a weird thing that you're not used to, and you're like, why would he be doing that? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And it makes your brain work harder on the things that are more difficult. Sometimes you get blown out because you don't expect some mythic rare thing that comes up when you get Bonfire of the Damned in draft, and you're like, well, that's never going to happen again.
I saw a guy in the PTQ semi-final for Dublin. He knew he was dead, and he could have played, maybe he could have put a creature down or something like that, but what he did, and he had like, say, 4 or 5 life or something like that, and he knew he was dead. What he did, he didn't spend anything. He put down a Shockland and took the 2 and then just sat. and said, pass to you. Oh. And the guy just looked at it and thought it over, thought it through, and then attacked with everything. The guy goes, yeah, you got me.
Oh. Yeah.
And they said, why did you do that? And he goes, gives him more to think about. Yeah. You know, he, you know, he's
literally
like,
any little, every little helps.
Yeah. Tesco. So you could just be weird.
Yeah. But
the funny thing about the long games, it's not the fact they're long, it's the fact that it's just like, they get complicated fast, mm-hmm. and then you spend your entire time trying to think your way out of a mess.
Mm. It's just familiarity, though. It's just like someone played a Bow of Nylea, which I know and I like having because the text is on my way up, and I can just go, "Oh, what shall I do now?"
I can pick from any of these options.
When someone else has got it, you go and fuck, all that stuff they could do. Mm. And it's like, what am I going to walk into? I've got to, if I do this, option number one. Not, yeah. If I do this, option number two. On mm-hmm. the, you know, it's like, and you go through that bow all the time. And it just drains you, yeah. You know. You've got to...
Because you have to think about that every turn.
Yeah, you just sideboard
like, do I do it on my turn to buff my attacker? Do I do it to buff my guy in case he has a burn spell? Do I gain life in case he has a double strike?
And you're perfectly... orchestrated winning strategy is ruined because of this one card that you have to keep thinking about.
And I had an interesting game with that where a newer player played Bow and I was like, oh my god, there's no way I can beat this. My deck is all flyers with two or less toughness. He just seemed to forget that bit of Bow. And he's like, I remember my attacking creatures have death touch and I can remember I can give them +1/+1 counters. I also remember I can gain life. And I was like, play Vapekin? And he's like, gain 3 life. I was like, bestow a thing onto it? You can't kill it anymore. And he didn't realize. The whole game didn't realize it can kill flyers.
There's so many things like that. Like, I drafted last week, and there was maybe 4 creatures. My opponent was in a situation where she had to chump block this guy that was coming.
Mm-hmm.
I spent maybe a minute and a half, 2 minutes just thinking, oh, God, there's got to be a way I can get rid of that flyer. There's no way I can get rid of that flyer. Screw it. I'll just attack with this guy and she'll chump with one of those 3 grounded guys.
Mm-hmm.
She chumped with the only flyer she had.
Oh, wow.
And I was just like, what happened there? So it's like instantly we're exactly on the same playing field. You know, it's like because people will do things you don't expect at all. So sometimes it's worth just giving it a crack.
Yeah. Something I advocate that some people don't advocate, which I think I could talk for a lot about, is push your opponent to make as many mistakes as they can and just minimize your mistakes. And you'll win games that
Absolutely.
Way.
The number of games I've lost because I've made a mistake is dreadful. You're kicking yourself out. I can't believe I did that.
It's very rare that you lose a game because you made 0 mistakes and you got really unlucky. But like if you push your opponent to make those mistakes, you'll win.
We mentioned that before the podcast though. It's like sometimes they just draw the perfect cards
and there's no combination of the cards you drew that could react to
and they just win. But it happens.
A tip someone else, you know, about being weird or a little gameplay things around it. I mean, I'm not saying being weird, I'm just saying being maybe atypical within the game. I had, so I can't remember what the color was, but I was playing say red blue and I kept tapping out all of my blue. I used my red and my blue to tap out for a 3-cross something. So if it was whatever colorless, I was using my red.
Yeah.
After the game, the guy said, I felt totally comfortable because you left that red mana. You tapped that red mana every time. So I knew, he was waiting for me to leave some red mana untapped, thinking I would have a burn spell.
Yeah.
So if you're looking across the table and you're seeing red untapped mana, it just puts a question in your opponent's mind. Isn't it? It's like, he's going to burn me. Shall I do this? Yeah.
But if he's always keeping it tapped, you're like...
Yeah, if I tap it out, there's no way it's coming. He's got like one blue spell. He's going to bounce it. He's not going to kill us. Great. That makes me have a completely different set of thoughts.
Yeah, one of my opponents did the same thing to me. He says, you're always tapping out to use one of your enchantment cards because it had a spend mana cost on it. And he said, why are you doing that on your turn? Why don't you do it in my end phase? I'm like, that's a great idea. And he said, because then you're sitting there with like 12 mana unspent and a whole hand of cards and it's a blue deck, so you're scaring the crap out of the other person.
Yeah.
And then he's like, and then during the end step, you just spend all 12 and get it straight back again.
No, you've taken a step back from that. Use your second main phase. I mean, it's such a newbie thing. It took me ages to get used to because I was thinking, right, I've got my plan. I just want to do it before I forget it. Mm-hmm. First main phase, here it is. These are all my creatures. Now I'm going to attack. Now it's your go.
Yeah.
And as soon as you get past that, you go, right, I'm going to attack doing this. And I'm going to leave all this mana untapped. Mm. I'll have my second main phase and here's everybody.
Yeah.
And that just throws people off
but
as well.
It's awesome in Limited because you use that to your advantage. So you have a 3 mana pump spell in your hand.
Yeah.
But you also have a 5 mana creature and you have 5 mana. you can attack, and they're like, no, I'm not going to block that. I feel like you have a pump spell. And yeah. Even if you and don't have a pump spell, you're like,
I'm not going to block that because that you might kill my creature, yeah. And then you don't. And
it feels like a little victory when that happens, doesn't it? And you go, and now here's my 5-drop there.
Yeah, and they're like, oh, he didn't have one. And then you make the same attack, they're like, the block, and you're like, pump it.
If you have the pump and the 5-drop, it gives you way more flexibility and strategy.
It's huge, and like if you win games through bluff. I don't recommend playing only on the back of bluffing, but you win those games.
It's somehow. Not by bluffing. It's making your opponent question what you're doing just by how you play your stuff out.
Exactly. And if you get into good habits,
like you said,
that,
make them think harder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The last story I was playing a Return of Ravnica draft against Kian, who comes in the store. Yeah. One of the first times I met him. And I was in a commanding position. I think we'd had one game each, and I was like dropping guys on the board, and he had 6-7 land in play. But every time he played a land, he'd play it like he was playing green red, and he'd play it over with his forest, and he'd be like, man, I drew another land. But then he'd look at the cards in hand, and he's like, what is he doing? And this was in draft, and I was like, he's
grouping them according to what cards he's got.
He's grouping them in a very odd way. Not in a way that he's just putting it down because he's disappointed he's drawing lands. And I was like, what could he possibly have? Also, why hasn't he conceded? Because I've got a massive board here. I'm just attacking. He's just like chump blocking.
He was like an 8-drop or something.
What on earth does he have? And he had plenty of mana.
Yeah.
And I go, I think I had a big flyer in my hand, 4 toughness or something. And I was like, oh my god, he's waiting for the 3rd red source so that he can wipe my board with Mizzium Mortars overloaded because it's the only way that he can win the game.
Yeah. Yep.
And I was like, you've got Mizzium Mortars. He's like,
how
did you know that?
If he's waiting, no way. If he's got plenty of green and he's waiting for that 3rd red,
it's
going to be a blowing up spell.
And it was a very particular way that he was playing. Cool. And I was like, oh man, he's waiting for the 3rd red source with Mizzium Mortars. And when all of those cogs just kind of click into place because you know the draft format and whatever, I was like, ooh, I'm going to leave stuff back in my hand. So he overloads it, thinks he's got the game, and I'm just like, big fly. He's like, and I think
he blows everything up, and the first thing you do is put down 2 big creatures.
Yeah, it's like, oh god. I was like, yeah, so
that's the next level I think I've got reached is like learning the catalogue of cards and so I can look at what they've got and like, so even if I want to attack with something and they've got like a couple, like a 2-3 mana sort of thing, knowing what colours they've got, what cards might be available to them. So if you're in a limited format, you can sort of think, wow, they'll have these cards.
Exactly.
What's going to happen? And if you could pretty much, if you know that, you can attack quite confidently.
Yeah. Some stuff that happens every time the set comes out is you literally sort the card set by what instance there are. And you memorize them because green, white, and red have the most combat tricks. So if you're playing against a green, white, or red deck, and they attack, and they've got a certain amount of mana up, you know which spells they can represent.
Yeah.
So someone played a thing pre-combat and then attacked with 1 green mana open. I was like, oh, I'm good. They don't have anything because there's no spell in this entire set that they could be bluffing. Now there is one, but it's like a plus X, where X is your devotion to green, and his devotion was like 1.
Okay.
So you can make those blocks because you know what you're playing around. So
that sounds like a really good topic for like a section on one of our Magic podcasts, I reckon, because I'd love to know more about that.
Yeah.
Because this weekend I've been amazed at listening to more experienced players. Have already kind of just absorbed. Like P-Jack.
I'm
listening to that.
I'm
slightly above a newbie, so I hear that. I'm like, that's way beyond my ability.
No, but I love just hearing everyone talk about. Yeah, you were talking. There was like a group of you were talking with like 2 or 3 people, and it's like you've already absorbed all of the cards.
Would you say that they were a group of experienced players?
Yeah, they were experienced players, and most of them were handsome, very handsome and charismatic. There was a few that weren't.
And then there was one
that wasn't. But here's this set has still, you know, you can still smell the fresh plastic off the booster boxes.
Mm.
And you guys have already like just downloaded the cards and I'm still studying up every single one. Mm. It's because, you know, and you hear people say, this is just the new card that came out like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And so I've played with it. I know what to do with it. Here it is again, just with a different sort of, different shade. Even if this is the new this card and it's got this extra feature or a little bit less, it's very easier to do it, put it into the library of cards, isn't it?
It's tough to adapt to cards that you have seen no parallels with. There's a card called Hunter's Prowess, which is 4 and a green. Target creature gets +3/+3 trample. Whenever it deals damage to a player that turn, draw that many cards. Oh. I haven't played with a card like that in a long time.
That's really unique.
It's it's quite unique. And it just means that if you have
is a... Is that a blue?
It's green.
No, it's green.
Yeah. And it's drawing cards.
It's trample, though.
Yeah, green always has... Green has a very small amount of card draw. It's generally always related to
creatures. Is that a sorcery?
It's a sorcery.
Yeah,
so enchantment. A sorcery means that if you have an instant speed removal spell, you're going to want to keep it if they've got that in their deck. But otherwise, there's no real way to play around it because it's just like they attack and you're like, oh, I guess I'll block there. But if they pump it beforehand, you're like, oh, I've got to decide how many dudes to throw away so I can minimize the amount of cards they draw. It's cards like that that are hard to evaluate because you haven't seen anything that's specifically like that.
It's also
that
one of those cards that it's very hard. It seems like it's very hard to play in a specific way.
Yeah.
Like because it's so unique that you obviously got to get on a big creature and attack when they don't have much out.
Yeah, like
out.
Play it on a flyer, draw six cards. That sounds amazing, but it's not going to happen on a flyer every time.
You also need a deck that benefits from a lot of card draw.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
So if you draw a bunch of weenies, it's not going to be good.
Okay, so that's our self-indulgent post-pre-release magic wound
couldn't
up.
Get away from the board.
No, we had to do it. It was just huge. So, I hope people got something from that. Otherwise, we enjoyed it.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much it. Get in touch online anywhere and get involved. It makes it more fun.
Mm-hmm.
And it's over to Aaron with the outro, which everyone enjoys.
I'd like to thank Eric for coming on to the Traders podcast today. It was been a pleasure having
thanks
you.
Thanks for the invitation.
Excellent Roman snogging.
Yeah, right. having a snog of a Roman. And thanks to Mr. David, as always.
Mr. David.
For assisting us in this podcast today. Very excited about Born of the Gods focused one in a couple of weeks, which is when we'll be back next.
I'm excited about playing Betrayal at House on the Hill again.
Yeah,
it's been a while. It's been too long, I realize.
Bring it in. We got to have a game.
Yeah,
for sure.
Mm-hmm. My favorite thing from my favorite story from playing Betrayal at House on the Hill was I was the old wizened woman who was wandering the halls.
Sounds about right.
As you do.
And my friend.
That's pretty much the sort of persona you have around the good games.
Exactly.
Here.
Yeah. I wear a little cloak and stuff. I've got pretty frizzy hair and a beard, much like wizened women do.
The shawl over the car.
Fetch me a tea, young lady.
Oh. And the Huffman glasses.
Yeah. I've got some chamomile out the back if you guys want a bit of hit of that. My friend fell down the coal chute and was hanging out in the basement exploring the pentagram chamber. He was an 8-year-old Asian boy, so that was an interesting mental image. He ended up picking up every single item from the item deck because we kept rolling the omen dice and just rolling like way more. And we're like, how long is this going to take? And just roll the demon dice and get plus to his stats and everything. And he ended up being the traitor. And and I was a very weak old wizened woman. I couldn't really stand up to him because he had demonic dice, a rabbit's foot, which gave him plus rolls to every single thing, a revolver, a spear, and I think like speed boots. So he literally just ran around the house and speared all of us to death. And that was my first game of Betrayal at House on the Hill.
And how's your raging beaver?
He's doing all right.
Yeah.
So. Foil Brimaz!
Yeah!